Well, good morning, MCC. We are truly, truly glad and thank you for spending this time in worship with us at MCC today. Real quickly, Tiana, is Tiana here this morning? Tiana, stand up. When she stands up, you'll see her. That's no Joyce Roberts there. I love you. I love you. If you've been around here for any time at all, Tiana's no stranger to you. She's the daughter of our youth pastor and his wife, Jeff and Polly Dyson. This is Tiana Dyson. She is a junior at Baylor University. She studied, well, don't applaud that. That's not an SEC school. I'm just kidding. She's a junior at Baylor University, and she's studying nonprofit marketing, event planning, and social media. Part of her studies require her to do an internship at a nonprofit. And we thought, we're a nonprofit. Maybe she could do her internship with us. So we got her to talk with her professors and part of the internship program there and back and forth. And they have agreed to let her do her internship here this summer. So she will be with us this summer as our intern in those areas of marketing and event planning and social media. So Tiana, we look forward to you being with us this summer. I have it on good authority. She has free housing and food. She will be staying with her grandmother and grandfather. So we look forward to that. We had a meeting this weekend with several of the ministry team leaders who will be using her help, and that will be helping her. This is an internship for her as well as a helpful experience for us. So you be praying for Tiana and all that good work for this summer. Well, we're beginning a new sermon series today, and we're calling it Scandalous. Now, it's not scandalous. It's scandalous. Can you say that with me? Scandalous. Doesn't that feel good? Scandalous. Today we're going to be talking about scandalous people, and I'm going to name them. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, it got real quiet there. Whoa. Don't leave. When you think of words to describe the life and ministry of Jesus, you can most likely think of a lot of things. Love, grace, healing, forgiving, sacrifice, caring, and compassionate, teaching, authority. And the list would be long before you came to scandalous, if you ever got there at all. The dictionary defines scandalous straightforward as something or someone causing general public outrage by a perceived offense against morality or law. Some synonyms that accentuate its meaning are disgraceful, shameful, shocking, and outrageous. Does that sound like Jesus to you? Oh, are you kidding? Yeah, it does. It sure does. Time and time again throughout the Gospels, we see how Jesus was unafraid of tarnishing His reputation. He often did things that were seen as outlandish and even scandalous. If tabloid papers were around in Jesus' day, Jesus would have been featured constantly in the headlines, linked with scandals of all kinds. He was accused of being a blasphemer, of abusing alcohol, of partying with prostitutes, and even working for Satan. In other words, scandals followed Jesus. And on the flip side, a huge part of His ministry and teaching tackled the scandals of His society head on. He was especially hard on religious leaders, those who were hypocritical, and used religion for their own gain and self-interest. He called out their teachings and their misuse and false interpretations of the law and prophets. He called them out for how they load people down with burdens they can hardly carry. And you yourselves, he said, will not lift one finger to help them. Using God, His religion and scriptures, and the temple for their own personal promotion and profit and benefit, enraged Jesus, caused His famous loss of temper. No one else, no matter how bad, how evil, how sinful, or how broken, provoked Jesus that way. Religious hypocrites, that's where He drew the line. When Jesus healed the sick, for example, nobody complained. But when He did it on the Sabbath, or if He said that someone's sickness was not due to sin, boy, He outraged almost every religious leader around. Are you too concerned with what others think of you or what they would think of you if you took bold stands for Jesus today? What will the neighbors think? What will my friends think? What will my teammates think? What will my coworkers think? What will the people in my church think? What will your "I told you so" mother-in-law think? Does worrying about what others will think make you avoid situations or even change how you would act or respond just to win their approval? It's all too common. It happens to the best of us. Paul once even confronted Peter with this very thing. In this series, we will examine several instances when Jesus was far more concerned with loving people and meeting the needs of others than He was with what people thought about Him. We'll learn how Jesus wants to help you break free of the oppressive need to fit in so you don't miss out on how He wants to love you and love others through you. Today we kick the series off with scandalous people, the company He kept, and the friends He chose. When we think of the friends Jesus chose, some were not so bad. Mary, Martha, Lazarus, His cousin John the Baptist, a bit of a scandal himself, but all in all, good folks. And while everyone was His friend when He fed them, when He performed miracles for them, and they certainly cheered Him on when He put the religious leaders of their day in their place. But it was the scandalous people. Oh, the scandalous people that He was constantly seen with. Women. Even women of ill repute. You know, prostitutes. Diseased women. Wasteful women. And children, pesky, dirty children, blessing them, telling us adults we need to be more like them. Why, even His disciples tried to keep their children from bothering Jesus. And He got pretty upset with them over that one, didn't He? And the whole lot of sinners, tax collectors, yuck! Jesus, how could you? He ate with them. He went to their homes. He healed them. He forgave their sins. And it doesn't stop there. The unclean, the outcast, like lepers, those having issues of blood, it's enough to make your skin crawl. And don't forget the sick, the blind, the crippled, the beggars. He was touching them. He was healing them. And they were following Him. And oh, let's not forget the Samaritans. Those despicable half-Jews, half-pagan Gentiles. No self-respecting Jew had anything to do with them. A real Jew wouldn't even pass through their disgusting land. But not Jesus. He went there. His disciples followed him there. He doubled down by asking a Samaritan woman for some water. Even his disciples were surprised by that one. And if you read that account again, you'll notice he stayed there 2 days. He didn't sneak on through. He stayed there 2 days. The fact that many there became believers, forget about it. The scandal was that Jesus was hanging out with Samaritans in the first place. What about those Gentiles? Romans, soldiers, centurions, oppressors of the Jews. Oh yes, he was invited to their homes too. He healed their children and their servants. Scandalous. Scandalous, I tell you, scandalous. And what about his inner circle? You know, those 12 men he chose? We're all surprised at the kind of men Jesus chose for his apostles. I mean, those men were going to be more than ordinary friends. He was going to be passing on his ministry and his message to them. They were going to be the founders of his church. We would suppose the Son of God coming from heaven would have gathered around him as his closest and most intimate of companions, men of intelligence and trained minds and wide influence, refined and cultivated men of his nation. Instead, he chose the kind of people you'd expect to be, well, scandalous. One unpredictable fisherman, one with a prejudice against Nazareth, a fanatic Jewish nationalist, a despised tax collector, a skeptic pessimist, two sons of thunder with explosive tempers, and a covetous betrayer. These men would witness miracles of healing, power over nature, and the raising of the dead. And yet, they argued among themselves about which disciple would be the greatest. Jesus spoke of his betrayal, death, and resurrection on many occasions, and yet all his disciples faltered. Matthew tells us all the disciples deserted Jesus and fled. Mark tells us when Jesus appeared to the 11 as they were eating, he rebuked them for their lack of faith and their stubborn refusal to believe those who had seen him after he had risen. Luke tells us when he stood among the disciples, he said to them, "Why are you troubled and why do doubts rise in your minds? What's with y'all? Haven't I done enough? When will you learn?" What about us? Here's where we can learn from Jesus about true friendship and how to choose our friends. Two things I'd like to point out quickly. The first one is, Jesus chose his friends deliberately. We should learn from Jesus that the essential quality at the heart of friendship is not the desire to have friends, but the desire to be a friend. Not to get good and help from others, but to be a blessing to others. These men Jesus chose, the 12 disciples, would not only be his followers, they would be his closest friends. In every way, the Son of God was going to be vulnerable to these 12 men. They would witness his fury against the money changers, his grief at a dear friend's death, and his misery as they abandoned him in the Garden of Gethsemane. But Jesus saw in them, despite their faults, they were teachable. Jesus deliberately chose these men because he wanted men who could understand the struggles of the brokenhearted and the poor and the afflicted. And Jesus was the truest of friends. He never tried to make the burden light or the path smooth or the struggle easy. He wished to make men of these disciples. Men who could stand up and face the world. Men whose character would reflect the beauty of holiness. Men in whose hands the gospel would be safe. Men who would take the gospel as ambassadors for Christ. He deliberately chose these men. Many of the yearnings we have for friendships are merely selfish longings. We have a desire to be happy, a desire for pleasure, and for the gratification of the heart, which we believe friends would bring to us. But many a man's moral failure began the day he chose a wrong friend. Many a woman's life of sorrow began with letting an unworthy friendship into her heart. On the other hand, many a life and career of happiness and prosperity, of success and true love can be traced to the choice of one pure, honorable, upright, true friend. The poet Elizabeth Barrett Browning asked the writer and clergyman Charles Kingsley, "What is the secret of your life? Tell me that I may make mine beautiful too." He replied, "I had a friend." There are many who can give the same answer. They had a friend who came into their life at the right time, sent from God. A friend who inspired in them the beauty of their character, who encouraged in them their fullest potential, who believed in them when others had given up on them, and who stood by them when they had given up on themselves. The aim of true friendship is not to make life easy for one's friend, but to make their friend better. That's God's method. He doesn't hurry to take away every burden under which He sees us bending. He doesn't instantly answer our prayer for relief when we begin to cry out to Him about the difficulty we're having or the trial we're facing or the sacrifices that we are making. He does not spare us hardships, loss, or pain. He does not want to make things easy for us. He wants to make something better and stronger of us. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "The chief want in life is somebody who shall make us do the best we can." Don't choose your friends on the desire to be popular or from the desperation to be liked, or because a smooth talker tells you all the things your heart wants to hear, or to fit in, or for the need to be loved. Choose your friends deliberately. That brings me to the second thing we learn from Jesus. He made His choice of friends a subject of prayer. Prior to Jesus choosing those 12 disciples, He eagerly sought to fulfill the will of God the Father. Luke tells us the night before Jesus began choosing those disciples in Luke 6:12, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. In nothing do young and old alike need more guidance of divine wisdom than when we're settling the question of who will be my friends. At the Last Supper, Jesus said in His prayer, referring to the disciples, "They were yours, you gave them to me." It makes a friendship very, very sacred to be able to say, "God gave this friendship to me. God gave me this friend. God sent you to me." At the end of his great classic, A Tale of Two Cities, Charles Dickens tells of a little girl, scarcely more than a child, riding in a cart. In the cart with her is a man she had only met the night before in prison. A man who, according to Dickens, had lost his soul but had found it again. Their cart was rumbling toward the guillotines because the parishioners were being beheaded for their friendships with former ruling authorities. When they arrived, facing death, holding his hand, the little girl looked up at her newfound friend and she said, "But for you, dear stranger, I should not be so composed, for I am naturally a poor little thing, faint of heart. Nor should I have been able to raise my thoughts to him who was put to death, that we might have hope and comfort here today. Citizen Everman, I believe you were sent to me by heaven." Proverbs 18:24 says, "One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." Do your friends fit that category? Are you a friend who fits that category for others? At school and at work, you're one of the popular ones. How dare you sit with those students? Did your mom ever teach you to be careful about the company you keep? You're the one coworkers look to for leadership and answers. You're the one others observe and notice you go the extra mile to get it right. You're the one they turn to when they need a friend to listen. You need to be careful who you're seen with. But did you ever think you may also be the only Jesus they will ever see? Jeff and I were talking this last week about how cool. Now, I may have dated myself with that, but that's what we used to say, how cool. What's the word today? Young people, what do you say today for something that's cool? Huh? What do you know? You're older than I am. No, I'm just kidding. I'm ready to get out of this hot water. But Jeff and I were talking this last week about how cool we think it would be to just hang out with Jesus. You ever think about that? Just to hang out with Him. How much fun that would be. Not spiritual, not a classroom for teaching, not church. Just hanging out as friends. How cool would that be? Personally, I think the three of us could get into a lot of trouble. The only possible scenario more dangerous would be if Jesus was hanging out with me and Gary Holloway and Paul Palumbo. Scandalous! Y'all, listen, we got thrown out of the family restaurant for having so much fun. Didn't we? Can you imagine how many places we could get thrown out of with Jesus? Wouldn't that be the coolest thing? Few things in life are more important than choosing friends. Many young people wreck their futures by the wrong choices of friends, taking into their lives those who, by their influence, drag them down. The verse Barbie was speaking to was a verse that Barbie constantly drilled into our children and to all of our Bible Vo students, 1 Corinthians 15:33. Do not be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. If Jesus needed to pray before choosing His friends, how much more should we seek God's counsel before taking a new friendship into our life? And by the way, you want to be friends with Jesus? Here's what He had to say about that. You are my friends if you do what I command. Are you doing what He commands? Here's your takeaway. Choose your friends deliberately and prayerfully. You may find that you need some new friends. you may find you need to be a new friend. But I got to tell you, there's no friend like Jesus. Father God, this morning, we can all look at our lives and see bad choices and decisions we made, but perhaps none have affected more areas of our lives than the friends and the company we have chosen to keep. And I'm not saying that we need to be goody-two-shoes and only stay in this little circle. We can look at the life of Jesus as we did this morning. He hung out with a lot of people. We need to be in the company of sinners. Jesus said the healthy and the well don't need a doctor. It's the sick that need a doctor. It's not just the saved. Yes, the saved need to be with one another. Our fellowship is one of the sweetest things in the world. But the world needs to see us wanting to be a part of their lives, not their lifestyles. Seeing us wanting to let you love us and then love them through us. But those that we choose to make our friends, the ones who will be a friend that will stick closer than a brother, we need to choose very wisely. Those of us who have friends like that can testify instantly of friends that have been separated from us for years and for miles, and yet just one phone call and we pick up right where we left off. There are others, Father, that can stay in the dark room of their home and never hear a call, never hear a voice. They need a friend. Well, let me say, first of all, there is no friend like Jesus. Our first invitation would be for anyone who's without Christ to please accept Him into your life. Let Him be the friend that will stick closer than any brother you'll ever know. But then, Father, there are those too that need friendships to help grow in their faith and in their walk with You. That's what your church family is all about. I personally believe MCC is the greatest church family in the world. We'd love to extend our family more and more. Come be a part of family. And Father, there are those that need to examine our lives and realize that, you know, we've got a lot of friends around us. We've got a lot of people that we're influencing, whether we realize it or not, at work and at school and on the ball teams. And help us to prayerfully consider those that we will hang with, those that we will choose to stand with, so that we can be Your witness there. Make men and women out of us who will stand in the face of the world. Men and women who will not avoid situations. Men and women that You truly can trust with the message of Jesus Christ. And forgive us when we fail. We give You our praise and ask Your Spirit to move us to our decisions. In Jesus' name, amen.